In a normal adult ECG, that is when the rhythm is sinus, the R wave in lead V1 should be predominantly negative. The reason for this is simple. Lead V1 is a right-sided lead, so it normally sees the predominance of electrical activity as moving away from lead V1 and toward the large left ventricle. The area of transition in the chest leads where the R wave becomes taller than the S wave is deep does not normally occur until after lead V2 or lead V3. So the finding of a tall R wave in lead V1, that is an R wave in lead V1 that is taller than the S wave is deep, is not expected and should be accounted for. This makes up one of my lists. A list is simply when you recognize an ECG finding that immediately recalls the most common and most important causes of that particular ECG finding. I've intentionally limited the number and the length of my essential ECG lists so as not to overwhelm. So most of these lists are quite simple, such as the causes of a regular wide tachycardia when there are no P waves, for which my list consists of ventricular tachycardia, VT, VT, and VT, and only then something else, like SVT with pre-existing bundle branch block or Behrend conduction. My list for the common causes of a tall R wave in lead V1 when the rhythm is sinus consists of six entities, which include WPW, right bundle branch block, RVH, posterior infarction, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and normal variant. You might ask, why is there need for a list of the common causes of a tall R wave in lead V1? The answer is simply that this important finding is all too commonly overlooked unless we have some way to automatically remember to look at the QRS complex in lead V1 with the specific purpose of assessing the relative height of the R wave compared to the height of the S wave in this lead. I'll emphasize that the computer does not pick up this finding. Instead, the way in which I ensure that I'll always remember to check relative amplitude of the R wave in lead V1 is by looking for QRST changes as a routine part of my systematic approach. The specific reason why I added this step to my systematic approach is for the R in QRST changes, because it is the R that people tend to forget without this reminder. We need to look for R wave progression, which reminds us to check for the relative height of the R wave compared to the S wave in lead V1. And as mentioned, the S wave in lead V1 should be predominant. There may or may not be a small initial R wave in this lead, but in adults, the R wave should not be taller than the S wave is deep in lead V1. If it is, then this is not normal, and one should immediately consider which of the six conditions on my list is the cause. Caveat number one, the right ventricle is relatively larger with respect to the left ventricle, at least in terms of ventricular mass, during the first few years of life. So R wave amplitude may equal or exceed S wave amplitude in lead V1 in children up to about 5 years of age. Beyond this age, I'll write in my interpretation, R equals S in lead V1, if R-wave and S-wave amplitudes are about equal, or if the R-wave in lead V1 is clearly much taller than the S-wave in this lead is deep, I'll write tall R in V1, and I'll then consider these six causes. Caveat number two, my list of six causes is admittedly not all-inclusive. For example, uncommon conditions such as dextrocardia or a mix-up in the chest leads could also result in an unexpectedly tall R-wave in lead V1. And there are other entities, such as some drug toxicities, hyperkalemia, Brugada syndrome, etc., that may also, on rare occasions, be the reason for that tall R wave in lead V1. But my point in presenting this brief audio pearl is to emphasize that remembering this list of the six common causes of a tall R wave in lead V1 will go a long way toward recognizing what is going on with your patient. So how do we proceed once we recognize that the R wave in lead V1 is taller than it should be? The answer is simply to run through the list of these six common causes. You'll note that I list normal variant last. The reason for this is that determining normal variant as the cause for an unexpectedly tall R wave in lead V1 is a diagnosis of exclusion that should only be made after considering and ruling out the other five causes. Note that the QRS complex is wide with the first two causes, which are WPW and right bundle branch block. I've seen a number of cases of WPW, that is Wolff-Parkinson-White, in which delta waves were subtle, And it was only when I noticed an unexpectedly tall R wave in lead V1 that I went back and looked more carefully at the PR interval in all 12 leads, only to realize that partial pre-excitation was indeed present. Delta waves can be positive or negative. They are not always obvious, especially when the electrical impulse is divided between conduction over the normal AV nodal pathway and the accessory pathway. So detecting an unexpectedly tall R wave in lead V1 can sometimes be an important clue to the presence of WPW. Recognizing the other cause of a tall R wave in lead V1 when the QRS is wide is easy. Once you recognize that the rhythm is supraventricular with a wide QRS, right bundle branch block is diagnosed if the tall R wave in lead V1 occurs in association with wide terminal S waves in lateral leads 1 and V6. The other causes of a tall R wave in lead V1 do not manifest QRS widening. RVH, right ventricular hypertrophy, is recognized by seeing other ECG evidence for RVH, including several of the following: right axis deviation or an indeterminate axis, right atrial abnormality in the form of tall peaked P waves in the inferior leads, persistent precordial S waves, and or right ventricular strain, especially when several of these ECG findings occur in a patient with known pulmonary disease. Posterior infarction may produce a tall R wave in lead V1, or sometimes in less marked cases, the R wave in V1 may not be overly tall, but there is early transition with the R wave becoming taller than the S wave is deep already by lead V2. Most patients with posterior infarction have also had inferior infarction. So I look for inferior Q waves and ST-T wave changes in the inferior leads, and I look for a positive mirror test as I assess the shape of the ST segment in anterior leads V2 and V3. Finally, there is HCM, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which I include in my list because despite not being overly common in the general population, it is an important potential cause of sudden death, especially among young athletes. So it's important to be aware of ECG findings suggestive of possible HCM. I'll emphasize that echo is far superior to ECG for detecting HCM, but because cost concerns prohibit mass screening by echo of all young adults, a baseline ECG is often the first test done when screening for this disorder in young athletes. ECG findings with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy are highly variable, but most, though unfortunately not all, most individuals with HCM will have at least some abnormal ECG findings. Among the ECG findings to look for include ECG evidence of prominent septal forces, which may be in the form either of prominent septal Q waves and/or a taller-than-expected R wave in lead V1, which leaves us with the sixth cause of an unexpectedly tall R wave in lead V1, which is a normal variant. As emphasized earlier, the diagnosis of a normal variant as the cause of a tall R wave in lead V1 is a diagnosis of exclusion, to only be made after each of the other five causes have been ruled out. Whether this requires doing an echo or not to conclusively rule out HCM is a matter of clinical judgment regarding the case at hand. In summary, in an adult, when the rhythm is supraventricular, the R wave in lead V1 should not be equal to or greater than the S wave is deep in this lead. If it is, remember this list: WPW, right bundle branch block, RVH, posterior infarction, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and if none of these, then by exclusion, the unexpectedly tall R wave in lead V1 may be the result of a normal variant.